We're pleased to bring you a special Federal Drive discussion in this 9 o'clock hour. Our topic today is an important personnel issue for the federal government. We'll be talking about what's ahead for national security and civilian defense workers now that the national security personnel system has been dismantled. And what's ahead for them could affect all federal employees. Our guests today are Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Personnel Policy, Patrick Nealon, Director of Deloitte Consulting's Federal Total Rewards Practice, and Bob Tobias of American University and former member of the Defense Business Board task group that studied NSPS. It's great to have you all in this morning. And I'm going to throw the first question to Pat Tamburino. If you would just give us an update on where NSPS, or if there's anything left of it, and what happened to all those employees, where they are now.
Well, thanks. NSPS for the Department of Defense, all the employees were out of that system on December 31st. We transitioned 225,000 employees out of that system. They have reverted back to the system they were originally in before we embarked on NSPS, and we're pleased to say at the same time we put all those employees back in their original performance plan. We completed the pre-decisional involvement process with our national labor unions to design a new system. That report is being circulated with the Department of Defense leadership, and we plan on delivering that in February of this year to the Congress.
A really successful
labor management effort to get us out of that into something new.
All right, and Bob Tobias, you were on the task force that looked at NSPS. Give us a rundown on the lessons learned. I mean, what did you find? What was the real thinking of the board when they looked at that whole thing?
Well, the board believed that the performance management portion of the national of the NSPS system was excellent and should be salvaged, should be saved, and recommended that the pay for performance be significantly restructured, particularly in terms of the pay pools and the pay bands. But the infrastructure we recommended remain in effect.
That's interesting. So that means that having dismantled and moved out of the whole thing, they really didn't follow the recommendations of the task force.
They did not, because Congress then interceded and said that DOD had to dismantle NSPS. And as we know in this town, Congress overrides the Defense Business Board.
All right. And Patrick Nealon from Deloitte, you have looked at this across government, the whole personnel issue beyond the groups we're talking about. And from an industry standpoint and from your point of view of having seen across federal government, what are the big takeaways from NSPS as it was constituted?
Well, I think, as the gentlemen here have said, there are a number of lessons learned that came from the implementation and then the repeal of NSPS. As we saw that it was kind of a one-size-fits-all system, and for performance management, that often doesn't work, especially when you're looking at large populations like we had with the Defense Department. Also, the readiness for change of the employees maybe wasn't quite where it needed to be for an implementation of that scale, that magnitude. Looking at the different maturity levels of the organizations that were going through an implementation like that needs to be considered. And then finally, as I think maybe the most common reason or the common cause here is the stakeholder alignment and making sure that all stakeholders are involved in the process and understand what they're about to undertake.
Mr. Tamburino, tell us about the process of actually getting this done. What did it take to take these 225,000 employees and actually move them out of NSPS, make sure everything worked the way that it worked?
That was a very straightforward process for us. We basically had a set of rules that took where you were in NSPS, and we just assumed that most of the people went back to the general schedule system and aligned where they were in NSPS in terms of their pay band and the appropriate GS grade level and step. Nobody was economically harmed in the move. They transitioned to the step that was closest to their NSPS pay band. If they were above a GS 15, step 10, or whatever their appropriate performance level was, they just went on retained pay for a period of time. So it was a pretty straightforward, almost arithmetic calculation to move them back. So that was handled very well by the department. We didn't have a lot of issues with that at all.
I mean, day to day, people went to work. They went to work on a Monday, and they'd been to work on a Friday, and nothing really felt that much different.
There was a lot of communication to the workforce about what was happening, why it was happening. A lot of effort on the part of leadership to say, we still have to have performance objectives. We still need performance plans. Your service is still valued. So there was a lot of communication on the transition back. But the mechanics were very, very straightforward.
And Bob Tobias, I wanted to ask you again, looking across government now, the whole issue is pay for performance and performance management. Now these people are back in where everybody else is, unless they have a specialty band. There are specialties like for doctors and so forth. But how would you describe the status of pay for performance in practice for the federal government right now?
It's basically not being used anywhere. It was tried in DHS, it was tried in DOD, and it failed in both places. I think what the focus is now is the basic performance management system. And I think that's really important because that is the only piece that will actually motivate people to perform better in the future. There's a lot of data that is the motivating factor. When my work is tied directly to mission accomplishment, then I'm really motivated. And that's the fundamental part of an effective performance management system. We found that 90% of the 225,000 people on NSPS had their work was directly tied to the mission of DOD. But the interesting thing was that only 32% said their work was tied, which goes to the fact that there wasn't enough work done with those who were on NSPS to really understand the importance of that link.
All right, so how do you maintain that link, Mr. Tamburino, now that they're in the GS system? What's the system for making sure people at least have that part to go with them, that they're rewarded and recognized for the work they do that is mission-related?
Right, so that recommendation from the Defense Business Board influenced our thinking quite a bit. When you read our report and you just listen into the discussions between labor and management that led to the creation of that report, what they constantly say is make sure that there is an alignment between the organization, the workforce, and the individual employee, and every employee can find their work in the mission of the organization. And they put a lot of that burden on the first-line supervisor to coach them through that. And the report says if we can manage to accomplish that, the line of sight, people are comfortable with where they are. And there's a lot of investment in that in DOD right now. It's a very difficult problem to solve given all the pressures we're operating under. But the will and the desire is there.
And Pat Nealon, what do you see in terms of other agencies you've looked at, this whole idea of making sure that people understand the mission, that their work is tied to it, and that maybe it goes a little beyond just the first level supervisor?
Sure. I think the more clear the mission is of an agency or an organization or a company in private industry, obviously the easier it is to make that tie-in. I've looked at a number of the agencies within the intelligence community. They have a very clear mission. They have implemented something similar to NSPS called DCIPS, the Defense Civilian Intelligence Personnel System. They have run into some similar challenges. But at the end of the day, I think they have made a link between the importance of a performance management system, not just being focused on planning and appraisal, but also on intervention. So they place a very large focus on development of people, development of supervisors, and that relationship and the conversations that happen between a supervisor and an employee.
Well, let me ask you this, because a lot of the NSPS problems were labor union versus management. There was a lot of discussion there, and there were disagreements. And yet when you talk to the labor unions, the ones I've spoken to in the federal government do understand the missions that their people are involved with and say repeatedly that they want to make sure people can carry out the mission in the most effective way. So on that point, labor and management are in agreement. So what might have gone wrong?
I think the biggest issue I have seen between in a performance management system is really a trust issue. It's a trust issue between an employee, a supervisor, and the system or the performance management program. If people don't understand it, they don't believe in it. And so where we've seen it work the best has been in places where the leadership of the agency or the organization is not only the leader of the implementation, but is also the biggest cheerleader of performance management. They can articulate their performance management philosophy. They can articulate how the system works, and people begin to understand that. They also, as time goes on and they get used to the system, it starts to change the culture, and it becomes a culture that understands how to develop people and improve performance, both individually and of the organization.
We are speaking with Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Personnel Policy, Patrick Nealon, Director of Deloitte Consulting's LLP's Federal Total Rewards Practice, and Bob Tobias, former member of the Defense Business Board, and he was part of the task force that studied NSPS. He's now with American University. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about the post-world of NSPS and what comes next. I'm Tom Temin with Ruben Gomez, and we will be right back.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
The Office of Personnel Management is adding staff to tackle the backlog of retirement claims. Its new plan also includes automating its retirement technology system piece by piece, since a wholesale overhaul failed a few years ago. And it's going to work with agencies to improve the accuracy of retirement claims. OPM says it can eliminate the backlog within 18 months. About 50,000 retirees are waiting for the agency to process their benefits.
The beginning of another year is one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WEPA, a nonprofit association, provides a free online protection quiz and needs analysis worksheet to help you determine if your family has the right amount of life insurance coverage. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Hey, man, what's up? Angie went to Walmart and got this cool Pioneer HD radio receiver, and now she's like, I don't know.
Simple stuff. Check out the buyer's guide at HDradio.com.
Cool buyer's guide. Oh, here's the Pioneer DEH-44, under $120 at Walmart. Angie, hip and smart.
See, dude, HDRadio.com has the answers you need, and Walmart has the Pioneer with built-in HD radio technology you want. Now all you need to do is learn how to talk to girls.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDRadio.com. More radio, more value.
You can help the Army Historical Foundation honor the soldiers of yesterday and today. Go to armyhistory.org to learn how you can help build the National Museum of the U.S. Army. The museum will be the Army's national landmark, preserving the sacrifice of every man and woman who has worn the Army uniform since 1775. Visit armyhistory.org today and honor the Army's service of every generation.
Profile America, Friday, January 27th. Everyone who enjoys skiing owes a debt of gratitude to a man they probably haven't even heard of, Robert Royce of Woodstock, Vermont. This week in 1934, Royce set out to solve the problem of how to get back up the hill for another run down the snow-covered slope. Using 900 feet of rope, a tractor wheel fitted to an old Ford car, and some ingenuity, he made the first rope ski tow in the U.S. at Gilbert's Hill. The news of the convenience spread rapidly, and so did the popularity of skiing. Now, nearly 13 million Americans enjoy alpine skiing and snowboarding each winter season. Profile America is produced by the U.S. Census Bureau, measuring America, people, places, and our economy.
This afternoon on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Details on the Pentagon budget for fiscal 2013 are coming out. Some expert analysis on what the numbers and the changes really mean. The Federal News Countdown, featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by two experts in the world of the federal government. That and lots more on In Depth with Francis Rose, this afternoon between 3 and 7 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Good morning. It's 9:20. This is the Federal Drive with Tom Temin, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And my guest host today is Ruben Gomez.
Welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about the end of NSPS and what comes next. Our guests are Pat Tamburino. He's the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Personnel Policy. We also have Patrick Nealon, Director of Deloitte Consulting's Federal Total Rewards Practice, and Bob Tobias, an American University member and former member of the Defense Business Board Task Group that studied NSPS. And Mr. Tobias, during the break, we were talking about first-level supervisors, and you think there's a disconnect here that needs to be addressed.
There was.
The Defense Business Board did find a disconnect between what supervisors thought they should be doing and what NSPS required them to do. NSPS required first-level supervisors to really lead the people in their groups. And by leading, they were required to create a performance management plan, to have regular contact with the people they led. And when they were surveyed, they said, it takes too much time. We don't want to do it. We don't see it as our responsibility, which to me says that these first-level supervisors were all about being technicians and doing as opposed to leading. And that's a fundamental disconnect between what the performance management system requires and the way first-level supervisors actually performed. So that disconnect has to be successfully addressed in any new system.
And how do you fix that?
I think you fix it by making clear what the expectation of a leader is at every level, and that is to lead and not to do.
Well, I wanted to ask a question on that, and that concerns the size of the agency, because maybe something as huge as the Defense Department, can this kind of thing work when there are so many supervisors and so many layers? I'm going to ask you, Patrick Nealon, first from Deloitte, does this only suitable really for the small, integrated, tightly wound agencies?
I don't believe so. I think we've looked at organizations, big and small, public and private, and performance management can work, but it's a commitment, and it's a commitment from the very top that needs to flow down and change a culture. Mr. Tobias mentioned the disconnect between the roles and responsibilities of the first line supervisors. I think as we look at performance management systems, in many cases, an organization puts a tremendous amount of effort, time, money, resources into implementing something that becomes almost a compliance mechanism. It becomes an appraisal system, not a performance management system. And the key to effective performance management is really the intervention and the development of people, which is often left out of performance management systems when they're designed.
And earlier we were talking about the involvement and the participation of the labor unions where they are applicable in federal agencies. And Mr. Tamburino, you have changed the way labor is involved. Tell us what's going on now.
All right. The president issued an executive order that requires pre-decisional involvement of labor unions on substantive issues. We believe the NSPS transition was one of the earliest adopters of that PDI and may be the largest instantiation of PDI in the federal government. We use three labor management design teams of over 100 individuals that worked for the better part of 18 months, nearly full-time for 7 months, to design the system. And what the Department of Defense will give to the Congress is the report of the three labor management design teams, and that's their report. That will not be edited by Department of Defense leadership. That is what will go to the Congress. Obviously, we'll endorse it, but what is fascinating, if you would have walked into one of their meetings I would have defied anybody to figure out who was the labor person and who was the management person, because they had found out their collective wisdom could really solve some problems, and that's where they got to. So it was, I think there's a much greater level of satisfaction with that report right now.
That's an interesting point, because the president has also tried to revive the labor management councils throughout the civilian agencies, and it's been kind of slow going because there's some distrust maybe on both sides. But you're saying that when you finally let it happen, the results are pretty good.
We're very satisfied. We have many local and national labor management councils. My office hosts a national roundtable. We participate in the roundtable that's held by OPM and OMB, and I find it's a great exchange of information. You have to find topics of mutual interest, and both parties have to recognize what are the limits and what are the arts of the possible.
We're speaking with Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Personnel Policy, Patrick Nealon, Director of Deloitte's Consulting's Federal Total Rewards Practice, and Bob Tobias of American University. He's a former member of the Defense Business Board Task Force that studied NSPS. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about the end of NSPS and, more important, what comes next for workers in the federal government. I'm Tom Temin, along with Ruben Gomez, and we will be right back.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Dr. Alan Dappin, founder of DocTalker.com, a unique healthcare delivery model. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at OFPlaw.com.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Lupus is a chronic inflammatory disease that can affect your body from head to toe. But one big concern is right in the middle.
The risk of cardiovascular disease is increased 7 to 50 times in lupus patients. Increased thickening of blood vessels, called atherosclerosis, is also increased in patients.
While we've known about the increased risk for a while, Mayo Clinic's Dr. Vaidehi Chowdhury says there's renewed focus on research in this area.
Deaths from cardiac causes are emerging as an important morbidity issue, and therefore paying attention to one's risk factors like smoking cessation, exercise, keeping a good lipid profile, and then working with your doctor to control your disease activity.
For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McRae.
Join Jim Fleisig on Thursday, February 2nd at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. The program will focus on critical issues facing government and industry leaders in securing cyberspace. The panel includes government leaders from DHS, U.S. Cyber Command, and OSD. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum, Thursday, February 2nd at 12 noon, here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Lockheed Martin and McAfee.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Thousands of Americans this year will be diagnosed with a common disorder of the jaw area.
About maybe 10 million people in the United States have the disorder.
Dr. John Kuziak, a program director at the NIH, says the condition is called temporomandibular joint disorder, or TMJD.
It's a series of complex disorders that affect the jaw, the muscles, the joint, tissues and cartilage or surrounding the joint. It usually involves pain in that area, either upon touching it or with function. That is, when you open the jaw, you'll have pain.
For details on TMJD, visit www.nidcr.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. March for Babies! Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Good morning. It's 9:30. This is the Federal Drive with Tom Temin on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest host today is Ruben Gomez.
And this is our Federal News Radio discussion on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're talking about the end of NSPS and what comes next. And our guests are Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Policy. We also have Patrick Nealon, Director of Deloitte Consulting's Federal Total Rewards Practice, and Bob Tobias of American University and a former member of the Defense Business Board Task Group that studied NSPS. Mr. Tobias, before the break, we were talking about the involvement of unions, and you believe this is a really important piece of the equation.
The Defense Business Board recommended that in any new system or a revised NSPS system that the Defense Department really involve unions in whatever is created. And as Mr. Tamburino has pointed out, they used President Obama's executive order, which requires pre-decisional involvement in all important matters, as the basis for including and involving unions in what they're about to present to Congress in February. And I think it's quite significant because usually unions are portrayed as institutions who don't want to participate in a process that would lead to increased individual and organizational results. And managers are often portrayed as those who have the whip in hand. And yet what has come about here is both parties recognize the need to serve the public, and as a result have created a system that I'm sure both of them believe will result in increased performance and better service to the public. I think that's an incredible accomplishment.
All right, so let's ask you, Patrick Nealon, what do you find with union involvement at other agencies across government? Is it something that they're mostly good at or mostly lousy at, or there's some really good ones and not so good?
Well, I think like anything else, it really spans the spectrum. But I think, as the gentlemen here have said, the key is engaging with, whether it be unions or any other stakeholders that are going to be impacted by a change of a magnitude of a new performance management program, to engage with them early, understand what their concerns are, what their desires are, and work with them to design something that meets the needs of everyone.
Mr. Tamburino, so involving unions, how do you get them to work together with management in such a way that it's a spirit of cooperation versus one of competition, if you will?
First, I think the challenge I found in the year I've been in the job is, what are the topics of mutual interest? What do we want to work on together that, you know, it's important to the department and important to the workforce? So you have to identify the topic. Two, you have to recognize that people have great ideas on both sides of the aisle, and we spent a lot of time trying to create an atmosphere where you could actually put your idea on the table and debate it in an open, collaborative manner. And what we found through this NSPS PDI process, that doesn't happen in a day. It took a long time. They were at it for close to a year, and I'd say they spent 3 or 4 months just trying to figure out the rules for talking to each other and gaining comfort with each other. But once they got that, there are literally hundreds of recommendations in their report that I don't think we would have gotten any other way.
What are some tips for making that happen in terms of, like, conference rooms and places to work and how often they have to meet? Because I think a lot of agencies probably don't know how to begin.
Well, for us, it was, some would consider it rather extreme. Once the people were identified, both the labor people and the management people, and they're all government employees to begin with, they basically were asked to come to Washington for 2 weeks at a time. They worked in Roslyn, in an office building, in a common space. At the end of the 2 weeks, they outbriefed their results to several of the key leaders, and then they went home for a week. and then they came back for two more weeks. So to get a project like NSPS done, it was almost a full-time job for them. Huge commitment for labor, huge commitment for management, but it was effective, and the end result is they got to know each other.
But you don't start out the process on Mahogany Row, for example. You go to some neutral territory where people can let down a little bit.
I give great credit to John James, who was the original NSPS program manager that started it. He started this with a conference in Los Angeles called New Beginnings, I believe was the word, and they were in a hotel in a multi-day conference where they worked out what were going to be the rules of engagement. I think that was a great idea that John had, and I think it started them off quite well.
And Bob Tobias, in your work at American University, is that what you would say tell the people that come there to learn from you is a best practice in labor and management dealings?
It is a best practice, and what often happens is that the parties jump right into solving a problem without taking the time to create the necessary trust in the interest of moving forward. But, of course, oftentimes you have to go slow to go fast. And what we saw with NSPS is they attempted to go fast and drove off the cliff. Hopefully, with the new system that they're about to roll out in February, they went slow. There is agreement, and I assume, based on that agreement, there will be very, very fast implementation.
Now, before that rolls out, I think some people in Congress probably have to take a look first, and understanding that you can't give us the details here, although you're welcome to, but we'll understand if you can't. Give us in general principles what it is you're trying to accomplish with the system that follows NSPS for those people now in the GS.
I think you'll find the fundamental idea that it's going to be advanced in this report is it's not about the 365th day. That's the term the teams use. It's not about the day you get called into your boss's office and get your performance appraisal for the year. It's about, during the course of the year, have you, your supervisor, your second-level supervisor, been engaged in a dialogue, and when you've done something to aid the organization mission, did that get talked about? Did that get recognized? Did it get documented? Conversely, if things didn't go well, was that acted upon then? They are looking for real-time engagement, not a perfunctory conversation that occurs once a year. Everything else flows from that. That is what they believe the bedrock of the entire system has to be.
We are speaking with Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Personnel Policy, Patrick Nealon, Director of Deloitte Consulting's Federal Total Rewards Practice, Bob Tobias of American University and former member of the Defense Business Board Task Force that studied NSPS. And this is a Federal News Radio discussion about what comes after NSPS. I'm Tom Temin, along with Ruben Gomez. We will be right back.
The environmental problems we're facing today are more complex than those of 40 years ago. So what is the EPA doing to better incorporate sustainability into its decision-making? Why is the EPA involved in green chemistry research? Join host Michael Keegan on the next The Business of Government Hour as he explores these questions and much more with Dr. Paul Anastas, Assistant Administrator, Office of Research and Development with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Already this year, six federal agencies have offered buyouts or early retirements. Is your agency one of them? Check out federalnewsradio.com's buyout guide to see how slimmer budgets and changing priorities may be affecting you. Our buyout guide brings you the most up-to-date information on which agencies are offering buyouts, how many are offered, and who is eligible. Check it today and keep checking back for more information. Find it at federalnewsradio.com, search term buyouts.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Richard Spires is the Homeland Security Department's CIO.
In the 2012 appropriations bill, a congressman put in a provision asking you for a kind of a software inventory.
Well, it was interesting because I heard about that by listening to the program there on Fed News Radio, and I was like, oh, and my name popped up, and I was like, well, this is interesting. So we can always improve. We're a large organization. We use a lot of different software products.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Good morning. It's 9:40. This is the Federal Drive with Tom Temin, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest host this morning is Ruben Gomez.
And this is a Federal News Radio discussion about the end of NSPS and what comes next. Our guests are Patrick Nealon, director of Deloitte Consulting's Federal Total Rewards Practice, Bob Tobias of American University and former member of the Defense Business Board Task Group that studied NSPS, and Pat Tamburino. He's the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Personnel Policy.
And I wanted to follow up with you, Patrick Nealon. We've been talking about how you reward and criticize people, what the first-line manager does, and it seems like the idea of rewarding people or criticizing them at the point of the incident and not waiting till the 365th day of the year to tell them how they're doing, that's pretty common in industry. What do you find about its commonality in federal agencies?
Well, I think in industry and in the federal government, there's a different level of maturity of performance management from organization to organization. Some do it well. Some are learning how to do it well. The concept that Mr. Tamburino mentioned about it's not about the 365th day, that is a best practice. So you have conversations throughout the year. You have interventions throughout the year to make sure that you are mentoring and developing your people to work within the organizational culture and learn how to become a high performer. And that doesn't happen once a year. That happens every single day of the year.
So this implies to me that there's a lot of training that might be required for the first-level supervisor since they are the arrowhead on all this.
Right, absolutely. And I think you'll find that the very best performance management programs, whether it be in federal government or in private industry, the appraisal is only one piece of a performance management program. The biggest, most important part is the developmental program and teaching how to people how to do their jobs, do their jobs well, learn, grow, develop, and then have them help other people and repeat that process.
And Mr. Tamburino, is that something that you're focusing on in this next year ahead as you present to Congress and roll out the new way of working, is the focus on the first-line supervisor?
Yes, but we haven't waited. We have increased that focus in the past year. All new supervisors go through a mandatory protocol of training. They have refresher training, and it's focused on what is the art of supervision? How do you have the coaching, mentoring the conversations? How do you have the difficult conversation when it's warranted? And it's all focused on, are you equipped? Are you comfortable and ready to get in and manage a small work group or a large work group, as the case may be? But we have already embedded that in our supervisory pipeline. Really important for us to do that.
What are the biggest challenges of getting that done?
Supervision is an art. And I believe you would find in this report that we should put greater emphasis on the selection of supervisors. It's not for everybody, quite honestly. It's hard to do. It's a time sink. So we're really trying to coach people through, do you really want to do it? Do you really understand what's involved? And when they raise their hand, yes, I really want to, we want to give them solid foundational training, which I think we're well on our road to accomplishing that.
And I would say there's certain aspects of supervisory work that no sane person would ever choose anyway, even if you like the rest of it. Bob Tobias, what about the people moving up the chain of command, especially in the DOD where you have a lot of layers? Somehow people up at the higher levels need to make sure this is happening, but they have so much more to do besides that. How do you handle that?
Well, I think that performance management is an important piece in answering the question of whether or not those I lead are willing to give their discretionary energy to me to accomplish my goals and objectives. Is there sufficient engagement between me and those I lead so they're excited to be in the workplace? And that comes from engaging with that person on a daily basis, on a regular basis. It involves knowing the person, developing the person, giving them feedback. The structure to support that is the performance management system, but the goal is that is the creation of that engagement. And it's not just at the first level, it's at every level.
And that brings us to the point of SES, performance evaluation. There's a new system that's being rolled out government-wide. How will that impact what's going on at DOD?
Well, as you said, it's being rolled out government-wide through the Office of Personnel Management. It's focused on the executive core competencies. We embrace it. We participated in the design. I think what it does, it standardizes executive performance across the federal government, makes it a lot more transparent, and I think it draws to the point executives should be able to move from agency to agency, and I think that reinforces the idea.
I mean, they have about 55 different competencies that people are supposed to have,
right.
But I think some of those, some cluster of those involves making sure that the supervisors are doing their job that work for you, that middle layer.
Right. One of the executive core competencies is leading change, leading people. But I would say this, having been one of the early implementers of NSPS in a previous job, it begins with the corner office. If the corner office doesn't want to talk about it and delegates it to someone else, it will fail. In the command I was in, the corner office, that person that lived there embraced it, and he was the first spokesman about it, and people understood it. We can criticize the way we did it, but it was not for lack of senior involvement. And without that, it can't even begin to be successful.
I guess the lucky part for that is that the Pentagon has lots of corner offices on the inside and the outside, and times five, you know, so maybe that's helpful for you. And Patrick Nealon of Deloitte, this idea of the high-level supervisor who has maybe his or her own duties to perform, what's a benchmark of how much time you spend supervising the supervisors, or do you spend all your time doing that?
I think it really depends on the culture of the organization, the role of the individual. But for the most part, I think the concept of doing work and supervising are not mutually exclusive. We see that in best practice organizations, a person can be a great technical expert, can be a great technician, and also be a great leader of people and a great a facilitator of performance management within organization. So it's really based on how expectations are set from the very top and how those behaviors are modeled by the leaders of an organization.
We're speaking with Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Personnel Policy, Patrick Nealon, Director of Deloitte Consulting's Federal Total Rewards Practice, and Bob Tobias of American University and former member of the Defense Business Board Task Force that studied NSPS, and this is a Federal News Radio discussion about the future beyond NSPS, and we'll be right back. I'm Tom Temin along with Ruben Gomez. Stay tuned.
The Financial Safari Radio Show features some of the best retirement planners from across the country and is your source for common sense approach to planning for a secure retirement in Northern Virginia. Contact the father-daughter retirement planning team of Don and Jill O'Rourke at 1-800-664-7505.
Tune in to the Financial Safari with the father-daughter team of Don and Jill O'Rourke, Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. right here on 1500 WFED.
This holiday season, think about those who have given so much in the name of freedom. The Combat Soldiers Recovery Fund provides financial aid to American soldiers, sailors, and Marines who are recovering from severe wounds in service to our nation. Every dollar goes to military hospitals in the Washington, D.C. area. No overhead, no bureaucracy. Your donation provides immediate funds for the everyday needs of service members facing a long, hard recovery far from home. To donate or to get more information, please visit Combat Soldiers Recovery Fund.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explain how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few. The proud. The Marines.
Government financial managers are committed to produce timely, reliable, and useful financial information. Stay on top of issues that affect you at AGA's 10th Annual National Leadership Conference, February 16th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC features the latest tools and innovations to help agencies do their jobs more easily and more effectively. Don't miss it. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
Good morning. It's 9:51. This is the Federal Drive with Tom Temin on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest host today is Ruben Gomez.
And this is a Federal News Radio discussion about the end of the National Security Personnel System and what comes next. And let's talk about the importance of top-level leaders, the secretaries and deputy secretaries. Association of Government Accountants has a new recommendation that directs the Office of Presidential Personnel to really make sure the candidates is recommending for these top posts already embrace the ideas of performance improvement, not just have interest, but embrace it. Mr. Tobias, what's your take on that?
Well, I think it's really needed. Most political appointees are selected based on their knowledge about public policy and their ability to get the president's public policy initiatives through Congress. And they're not concerned with public policy implementation, which is what our discussion has been about today. So I think the president is addressing that by insisting on performance goals and objectives and having regular conversation about those performance goals and objectives. And we need that because it's sort of a cliche that the kind of change that is described by the implementation of a performance management system needs the person at the top to support it vigorously and regularly. If they don't, the chances of failure increase dramatically. So the more the political appointees are involved, the more they understand it, the more they hold the careerist responsible, the better the chance it will be implemented.
And Mr. Tamburino, of course, at the Pentagon now you have a secretary who has done so many jobs in government over so many years. He may be fairly new to DOD, but he sure knows where a lot of bodies are buried in terms of the total federal government. And, of course, the deputy is also experienced in DOD. So are you finding that's going to be helpful to you as you roll out a new personnel system for people in national security?
I think I have the complete support of the department's leadership, both the appointed leadership and the career leaders. When we completed our work in December and we began to bring the report around, we briefed it to the highest level of leadership across the department, and we had really excellent discussions and really excellent feedback. So I am more than confident that I enjoy support up to the Secretary of Defense's office.
All right, and Patrick Nealon, when you look at federal agencies, sometimes the horror stories come out about political appointees, but maybe that's because the bulk of them come into federal government and find they like it and want to do a good job. What advice do you have for the political people that coming in that may not know their way around, though, so well?
Around the performance management process in particular? Or around
well, that in particular, but also just the way the federal government works, its norms and cultures.
Well, I think probably the biggest thing is, even though you may feel like you're only going to be there for a short period of time, get to know the people and get to understand how your organization works, what the culture of your organization is, because it will help you be a more effective leader in the organization.
Yeah, I mean, Bob Tobias, it seems like the most important person you would want as a new political appointee is to bring in the top SESers and maybe the program managers to find out what's really going on.
I agree. And many political appointees do not include and involve those career leaders who eventually they're going to rely on to implement what they create. The quicker those relationships are created, the stronger they become, the faster change occurs.
All right, we have about a minute left, so I'm going to give the final comment to Pat Tamburino. Now, you've got a big job at the Pentagon as Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy. You've been through NSPS, you've seen the wind down of it, and now you are going to oversee what comes after it for the same employees. Where would you hope to be a year from now?
I think a year from now we will have completed the rollout. We'll probably be very close, if not done, with all the regulatory writing that's going to be required to implement the system. But I think what our focus is going to be in the next year is to communicate to the near million civil servants that serve the Department of Defense and the nation. Where are we going? Why are we doing it? What's their role? And why is their role important? That's where we'll spend all of our time.
All right, and that brings our discussion to a close. We'd like to thank our guests, and they have been Pat Tamburino, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Personnel Policy, Patrick Nealon, Director of Deloitte Consulting's Federal Total Rewards Practice, and Bob Tobias of American University and former member of the Defense Business Board Task Group that studied NSPS. You've been listening to the Federal News Radio discussion about the end of NSPS and, more importantly, what comes next. If you missed any part of this discussion, you can check our website later this morning or go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin. I have been joined by Ruben Gomez this morning. Stay tuned, because coming up next is Inside Government with the American Federation of Government Employees. They'll be talking about what's ahead for the collective bargaining rights of federal employees, apropos. Be sure to join us Monday morning starting at 6 for the Federal Drive, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, your source for federal news now.